The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler here, 710 KNUS. Quick reset, and then we're going to get to Joan and then KBB and Priscilla. The big state assembly for GOP, the convention, was this past Saturday. I was there. I was hoping to get some firsthand perceptions of what happened. We had a great call from Richard, who I ran into. It was so nice to have people come up and introduce themselves to me and say, hey, I listen to you on the radio. I'm a caller. It's just great to have that happen. Let's not do that in a bathhouse, though. That would be awkward. Nonetheless, Joan was nice enough to call in. I didn't want to cut her off. She had good and some bad things to say. And then we're going to have the two experts that ran the whole thing, KBB and Priscilla Ron, on in just a second. But let's get Joan first. Joan, I am so thankful you stayed on through the break. I can give you a whole minute. What do you want to tell us?
So I can list what I thought was run poorly. The security, the food operations, the distribution of credentials, the clickers in general, all the badges had barcodes on them to wand the people in for credentialing, but they didn't wand those badges to give you a clicker. I don't know who didn't think that that wouldn't work. And they had a whole bunch of people complaining they didn't get a clicker. I had a good friend who had to fight for a clicker and go up to Beasley.
Like
and
physical fight, like Star Trek Kirk fight?
No, verbal.
Oh, my gosh. Listen, Joan, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? That sounds pretty brutal, but there were some good things that you talked about before we got into the break. You've been to a few of these things. Was this, I use the term predictably unpredictable, because there, you just know the convention, that's how dynamic it is. Was this one more unpredictable than the last ones you've been to?
Well, here's the deal. I have to do a shout-out to the parliamentarian, trying to remember his name, Gregory.
Yep, that's right.
Cole,
it's Greg.
Carson. Gregory Carson was the parliamentarian there, and he is the best.
Your dog loves the parliamentarian.
CD7. CD7 was well run and fair, and I thought everybody came through, and it was nice, even though a lot of people are really highly emotional with this assembly, because they feel so cheated from the last election.
Joan, so, I think you brought up some good stuff that I want to talk to KBB and Priscilla about. Thank you so much, one, for being such a loyal listener and for calling in. I want to bring up Christy Burton Brown and Priscilla Ron. They are respectively the chair and the vice chair of the Colorado GOP. It was great to see both of you on Saturday.
Thanks, George. Good to see you, too.
Good morning, George.
Listen, there were aspects of this, and I said this in the earlier hour. I said it's not like herding cats. It was like herding cats that were on fire. I mean, there were aspects of this where at any moment it could have devolved into some sort of post-European soccer match melee, but it never did. It wanted to a couple different times. I don't know how you guys kept the lid on that thing, but you did. And for all the blemishes that there may have been, and Joan highlighted things that she didn't like, I thought for you guys being able to get from point A to point B, pretty good, pretty darn impressive. I mean, a lot of other assemblies didn't have those kinds of challenges. Christy Burton Brown, from your perspective, what were some of the, and we'll get to the details, and I'm glad Joan brought up the congressional district stuff, because no one's been talking about that. There were some surprises there. Overall, mm-hmm. What was your perspective of the assembly?
I mean, so I have a couple of perspectives overall. And one, George, it would be that we have a lot of passion in the Republican
Party. Oh, my
Party.
God. Yep.
A lot of anger, a lot of frustration. But if we can channel that appropriately into November, the Democrats had 100% virtual convention. Our people showed up. Our people want to act. They want to fight. They want to go get things done and change the system that's hurting our families here in Colorado and our communities. So I think if that passion and anger and frustration can be directed to the Democrats and probably a third of that room at least were new delegates who've never been a delegate to a state convention before. So I think that's amazing. We have a lot of people who want to be empowered citizens and get involved. So I'll say that, and then briefly my second overall point. We have three races that are uncontested at the statewide level. And those three offices actually match perfectly with our three big issues and our commitment to Colorado. John Kellner, Attorney General, focused on public safety. Lang Fias, Treasurer, focused on fiscal responsibility and making life affordable again in Colorado. And third, Dan Malloy, State Board of Education, focused on parental rights and educational options. I think having that with those three races and no primaries is amazing and great for our party.
I also predict all three of them will win. And that's not just me being a Republican guy. I mean, that's just my sense of the year and who's on the other side of those campaigns. I predict that they're going to win. Now, we'll come back to the John Kellner one in a bit. But Priscilla, I wanted to get your thoughts, too. From where you sat and the things you did, what was your perception?
Sure. I want to say this was my first state assembly ever. And I want to commend Christy for how she ran that meeting. She was very calm. It's almost like where you see the duck's legs underwater, where you knew things were happening, but she was able to keep her composure. And I think that's a really important character trait when you're leading such a huge organization like the Republican Party. I was definitely disappointed at some of the shenanigans that happened and the abuse, in my opinion, of people's time and disrespecting the process, which really hurt everybody. And so I hope we don't see that again. I think that's going to give a lot of people some ammunition going forward to change some of the rules to make sure that we respect the process and that we don't make a mockery of it. But I'm really pleased with the outcome. And like Christy said, we've got people that are activated, and that's exactly what we need, people that are passionate and ready to work.
You are right that there's a level of intensity there. And every assembly has energy to it and varying levels of intensity based on who the candidates are in the campaigns. This one was bigger than the candidates in some ways. And I want to say this, too. I agree with Priscilla's description. It wasn't just that, Christy, you kept your composure, but you had that trademark Christy Burton Brown smile on your face throughout some times where I am quite certain I would have gone F-word a whole bunch of times right into the microphone, because some of the things that were hurled at you, some of the things, listen, I'll describe this maybe later, but the thing with Neuschwanger at the end where she comes up and tries to grab the microphone, I thought this is the moment where I think it devolved into, it could have devolved into something really, really awful. And somehow you moved right past it. I don't know how that is. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about some of the logistics. First off, how many assembly goers, voting assembly goers, were there?
3,772.
Now, early on in this, the thing that I noticed was the line to get in was really, really long. Any thoughts on could there be either on Saturday or in the future some changes to allow more gates? Because even though I thought the mood was pretty good, I think it started off with people like, come on, man, I've been waiting in line for a month.
Yeah, no, George, I think you're right about that. I think eventually we were able to get the venue to open up more gates and put their security, and they require certain security there, at multiple gates instead of just one. In my view, yes, that should have been done earlier. We need to do that differently in the future.
Describe what happened with the voting stuff early on. Like, I was unprepared for, given all the groundwork that got laid leading up to this, I was unprepared for a last second, hey, let's ditch the handheld devices and let's go to color-coded paper ballots. But that happened.
It did happen. And I knew that people were going to bring it up. We all know it's, you know, a huge issue of elections in general, that some people in our party, you know, don't trust anything other than paper ballot. I had many conversations with people on Friday at our assemblies over there trying to explain to them that, hey, I am getting a whole set of messages from Republicans across the state coming to this convention, a section of them demanding paper ballots only, saying that's all they will trust, and then a section of people saying, don't you dare do paper ballots because I don't trust human error. So a big mix. And so, and Priscilla knows this, what we did, we went through, we found secure electronic keypads that are auditable, verifiable, encrypted, not connected to the internet. I think I already talked about this on your show, George. And that's what we decided to do, to balance the desires of both sides for election integrity and what both sides don't trust. We found something that kind of met in the middle. But you're right, people wanted to push for paper ballots anyway. I think what's very interesting, when you're standing on the stage where I was, you can see the entire arena, people all the way up to the ceiling in every portion of the arena. We had to take two different votes on whether or not we should do paper ballots. The second vote was 3/4 of those people against paper ballots and in favor of using the secure keypads. And I think that's compelling.
And I think that you ended up doing the vote twice, really at the request. There was a procedural thing, but you ended up doing the vote twice. Both times it turned out. And I think, one of the most compelling arguments, and Priscilla, tell me if you heard something different from folks out there, was that if we go to paper ballots, we're going to add a month to this process. I think what you said is, look, we'll be here till midnight. There's just to calculate those things. It would take forever. And I think a lot of people around me, and I'll tell you a story about someone who sat in front of me in a moment, were like, wait, what? I don't want to be here till midnight. Priscilla, what did you see and hear out there?
Yeah, absolutely. We all want to have election integrity. I personally have a certain or a higher level of comfort with clickers. As a teacher, we've been using clickers in our classrooms for years. And so I think when we're talking about technology and speed, people have different comfort levels. And so if this is a new piece of technology for you, I can understand the hesitancy. But practically, we have to get through these votes because people were even leaving midway through the assembly because they had other things to do. So if we want to get our candidates elected and be able to track and verify and audit our own votes, this is the best way because paper ballots just wasn't practical with that many people.
There was a woman sitting in front of me from my own county, and otherwise I'm sure a great Republican and a great supporter of conservative issues, who turned around and told the folks in our row that, like, these devices were created by a German company who does video games and they're radio frequency and they can be hacked to weight some votes more than another. And I just remember sitting there thinking, one, I've never heard this before, but two, I was thinking, really? I mean, is that where we're at now? Like, anyway, it was a little disconcerting. And there were a number of people, as you know, from the yelling, that were just fervent about the idea that anything electronic was bad and we must go to the paper balloting. But you guys got through that and moved forward. And that's one where it could have really derailed the entire assembly, but you guys kept moving forward. So my hat's off to you. Can we talk a little bit about some results?
Let's do it.
One of the things that you guys mentioned on the radio last week was we're a party that allows floor nominations. We don't make you send in notice 30 days before. Some county parties did that and they made those decisions, but the state was like, no, we'll let you do floor nominations kind of unannounced. The only downside is you get half the time. You don't get 10 minutes, you get 5. But on Friday, we had congressional district assemblies and there were some surprises. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I think the biggest surprise in congressional district, and Priscilla was in the same meeting, so she might have another perspective, was congressional district 4. There was a floor nomination, someone named Bob Lewis. Actually, I know him. I grew up very near to Elbert County, and he is from Elbert County. So he was nominated on the floor against Congressman Ken Buck, and they both did get on the ballot. Bob Lewis getting top line, Congressman Buck also making the ballot. So it's going to be a primary in CD4. And most people there were certainly not expecting any nomination. People thought it was going to just be Congressman Ken Buck running again.
I think that's true. Priscilla, what was your perception of how that went down?
Well, like Chrissy said, it was a surprise to everyone because normally someone decides pretty early on a federal race that they're going to run because it's very expensive. You need to talk to delegates. So, but I'm always fascinated by the democratic process of we the people and nominating and representation. And I think of history. And so every district, and especially now, people are waking up and saying, this is what I want for representation. So whoever ends up being selected, just know that the people of that congressional district are going to be paying attention and they want to be heard and they want their congressmen to be present and to listen and to vote with Republican principles.
The bittersweet part of that for me is I've known Bob for a long time. First off, Elbert County, one of the great counties in the state of Colorado.
Yeah.
And really the only Absolutely. Reason I became district attorney, and the only reason John Kellner got elected to be district attorney is Elbert County. And they're great people out there. And I've known Bob for a long time, and he's a good man. The bittersweet part of this for me is either way this turns out, a friend of mine becomes the representative for CD4. The downside of this is I got two friends of mine who are, you know, now competing for the same position. And I wish there was one of them that I was like, I just don't like that person, or I don't. But they're both good dudes. And it's just it's politics. That was not a question. Right. I just left it hanging out there. Let's do this. If you guys can stay on, I want to come back and talk to you about a couple of the other things that took place. One involving the floor nominations in general, and then we can talk about some specific ones. The thing that happened with John Kellner, and then maybe talk a little bit about the Neuschwanger thing at the end. I know those are not all upbeat things, but this is really the first chance that anyone's got to hear you guys talk about these things. And with social media being the way it is, man, you could get on the wrong thread and come to the conclusion that the fix was in. This was all the product of some crazy fix. And if you were there, you know that did not happen, man. That was definitely not possible given the conditions. So if you can stay on, I'll take you back after the break. Is that okay?
Sounds great. Sounds good.
Christy Burton Brown, Priscilla Ron, Chair, Vice Chair, Colorado GOP. What took place on Saturday when we come back? Until that time, George Brockler, 710 KNUS. Such nice, pleasant music. Dreams. I don't know what KBB and Priscilla's dreams were of the assembly going into Saturday, but I don't think it probably turned out the way they thought. Nonetheless, it still happened, and it happened despite the fact that there were, in my opinion, unprecedented things that took place, things that you just couldn't have predicted. And like I said, predictably unpredictable. But floor nominations was one of them. We're pleased to be joined on our VIP lines by Christy Burton Brown and Priscilla Ron from the state GOP party. Thank you for staying on, both of you.
Absolutely.
Now, the floor nomination thing, which we talked about, the first thing that really got this kicked off was in the governor's race. Talk to us about what happened. And I'm specifically referring to Joe Altman, Patrick Neville, all that.
Sure. So, like you said, George, we talked about on the show before, historically, the Republican Party has always allowed floor nominations. But I would say a position on allowing floor nominations has always been rooted in some trust that the people who are attending the assembly are looking out for the good of the party, and that these are Republicans who truly are wanting to run for this office. Maybe missed the notice of when they needed to get their notification into us that they were running in order to fully participate at the assembly. So we've always been, you know, the big tent party, let everyone have a chance.
Or it could have been a tactical decision, right? Like, just like with Bob Lewis and CD4,
sure.
You could think,
well,
hey, I want to show up. And I mean, it could be a tactical decision. But here, it was neither of those
things. Agreed. I entirely agree, George. And I more mean, why do we allow them? So the reason we allow them is what I said, but why do people do them? You're absolutely right. It often is very strategic. But I think if we're going to see people use floor nominations for a different purpose than to actually run for the office, that is an inappropriate use and misuse of the trust of the delegates who are attending to select people for an office.
What happened is, for the folks that weren't there, and I don't know if the video is out there yet of the thing, and I reached out to Joe to see, and I don't think it's available yet, but at some point it'll be available on social media. People can go watch and get their own impressions. But Patrick Neville, and I can't remember who the other person were, nominated and seconded Joe Altman to come up and run for governor. And Joe took to the podium and used the 5 minutes he was allotted, minus the nomination and seconding, to, in essence, just give a speech and then throw his weight behind a couple other candidates for a couple other offices. That right there, in some ways, was the genie out of the bottle for the rest of the day. Priscilla, you were up there. Did you have any sense, one, this was coming, or two, did you expect at the end, Joe, to say, I am turning down the nomination, I'm not really running?
No, I didn't expect any of that. None of us expected any of that. And this is what I'm saying. I mean, as a Republican who's involved in the process and takes this very seriously, I lost some trust in that process with individuals using that in a way that wasn't appropriate. And I'm big on integrity. I think it's really important that we respect one another's time. And so what it did is it put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths about, like, what should we do? Should we change these rules going forward? Because we don't want to have that kind of experience for Republicans going forward.
Well, as a attendee and someone who's been to a million of these things, I do think we need to change the rules, because it's not that what took place, with the exception of the Kellner thing, and we'll talk about that, it's not that what took place was a violation of the rules. It was an exploitation of the trust built into the rules. Like, who could possibly conceive of someone using the opportunity to be floor nominated as just a vehicle to give a speech supporting two other candidates, or in the case of John Kellner, to trash a guy? And so let's get to that part right there. So the governor thing goes off. I think there was that. There may have been other floor nominations, but that was the one that took place that really legitimately and from the get-go had no intention of actually being about running for governor. And then we had some floor nominations. Those things went up. And then we had Greg Lopez, who went up, and he ends up getting top line with like 34-point-something% of the vote. Heidi gets up there. I spoke for Heidi for a very short period of time. And I just want to say right now, I feel like I got robbed, even though this had nothing to do with me. It was about Heidi. I wanted to have the time to say, hey, folks, if you are one of the paper ballot people and you're opposed to the electronic thing, just write the name of the candidate of choice on the actual electronic device and turn it in. I thought that would have been a way to bridge the gap, but nobody wanted to let me say that. Nonetheless, so I spoke for that. And then we had Daniel Neuschwanger, and all these other people had got an opportunity to speak. And the vote came out, and Heidi got 32-point-something% of the vote, and Danielle just missed it by 27. That's a little tease, because we'll get back to her. But then we get into the attorney general's race. And there is a floor nomination that is made, and a guy named Rich Wyatt, who is a delegate, stands up and says, I nominate Stanley something something Thorne to be attorney general. And you know who else does too? Ron Hanks. People, you know, the Ron Hanks people cheer. And so does Tina Peters, and the Tina Peters people cheer and all that stuff. And then I can't remember who the other person. Oh, there was that blonde lady, America's mom, whatever she calls herself. She got up and said the same thing. They nominate this guy. He gets up there. He looked like he walked right out of Bon Jovi's Dead or Alive music video, right? He's got the cowboy hat on, the duster jacket, and gets up there and basically talks about why he's this constitutionally based, blah, blah, blah. He leaves. He gets done. There's applause from the Ron Hanks and the Tina Peters people. Blah, 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 blah. He gets done and leaves. I went up to, and I asked you, Christy, I said, hey, point of information. And I said, I want to know what the minimum credentials are to be the attorney general for the state of Colorado. And Chris Murray, the party's attorney, comes forward and he reads out that, hey, you have to be at least 25. You have to be a Colorado citizen. You have to be licensed to practice law under the state of Colorado. The one thing Chris didn't say, and I think in the future we'd have to check on this, and I think we just took it for granted, because again, this is about trust, right? What he didn't say is, you got to be a registered Republican to also be part of this process. And so you appropriately asked Stanley Thorne to come up and say whether or not he, and I asked of all candidates, whether or not he was licensed under the laws of the state of Colorado. And Christy, what did he tell you and the assembly attendees?
Well, it took him a while to get to it, but he said no. He said he was not licensed in the Supreme Court of Colorado, but that he had his paperwork in to attempt to get reciprocity granted, because I think he's a member of the State Bar of Texas.
And then later he backed off and said, well, I haven't started the formal process yet, but I will. And I'll be honest, I knew that was coming, because when I heard about this guy's name earlier in the morning, I had started to research him on the phone, despite the fact that the Verizon coverage in that arena was garbage. I mean, it was just, there was 8 billion people trying to access that network, and it became hard. And then he says, look, I'm not, but I could be, and I'm going to be, and all this other stuff. He leaves then, right? And then there's another floor nomination, and it's three people all wearing, I'm going to do the description here, all wearing these Ron Hanks supporter vests. They're like yellow traffic vests. And they get up there and they nominate this woman who looked really super young, but you know, you don't judge based on the cover of the book. She goes up there and trashes John Kellner, saying a bunch of stuff that she believed he wouldn't do this, or he wasn't a supporter of this election stuff, or whatever it was. And then she announces in her speech, I'm not even an attorney. And with those words in the air, Christy, you were like, hang on. You can't, you're not even a legit candidate. Get off the stage. And so she leaves. Nonetheless, it created this weird, weird dynamic. John gets up there, he's nominated. And there are people from the Ron Hanks crowd. This is my perception. I'm not asking you to comment. My perception. Ron Hanks people peppering John during his speech with questions about, answer the question about prosecuting Griswold. Answer the guy. I mean, just, I've never, ever, never seen anything like it. Have you, Priscilla, and I know this is your first assembly, have you ever seen anything like this at a county, at a district, at a state, anything like that?
No, I've never seen anything like that. I think it's really unfortunate because it's our job as delegates and voters to vet our candidates. And if we have anything to say, there're definitely appropriate platforms to do it. But when you're in the middle of a nomination, a formal nomination process, and you play games and you disrespect everyone's time, it's not okay. And she's laughing, making a mockery of it. And it's shameful behavior, to be quite honest, and it lacks integrity. And we just don't treat each other like that.
I agree. I thought, once again, it wasn't that this actually was a violation of the rules. There was no good faith here, but it was an exploitation of the trust, in my opinion, that has existed for decades in the way we've done business. And you just sort of have taken for granted that the people that are there are operating in good faith. And then you realize this is now round two of I've exploited these rules and I've abused that trust. And this is just for me. I hope in future conversations about what to do, the after action report, we revisit now what are going to be the gatekeeper credentials for someone to even access the podium, because that became a bit of a train wreck. Now, nonetheless, this guy ends up garnering enough votes that he would have made the ballot, but he's not on the ballot. Christy, how does that happen?
Correct. And you know, George, I think the way you described it is accurate. That's what happened. I think, in my view, the people who were pushing this guy, Stanley Thorne, not a Colorado admitted attorney, an unaffiliated voter, the people who are pushing him are the same people who talk about election integrity. They disenfranchised the vote of every single delegate there who voted for him on their word. When they got up there and said who endorsed him, when they got up there and nominated him, presenting him and him presenting himself as if he were a Republican qualified for this office. To say you believe in election integrity and then to disenfranchise the vote of hundreds of Republican delegates who are taking your word for it is very, very troubling to me. And what we of course did, George, is we found out that he's an unaffiliated voter, not a registered Republican. And the rule is that if you are not a registered Republican 30 days in advance of assembly, you're disqualified to run for the office as a Republican. And so I will not be signing his candidate designation form. John Kellner will have no primary. He is the only Republican, and he received 100% of every legal vote cast at the assembly.
Now, you bring up a couple of really good points there. One is that, I'm going to use the term, that was a fraud that was perpetrated on the assembly goers.
Absolutely.
And those people that voted for this guy ought to be pissed off at who led them down that road, because they talked them into voting for a guy who wasn't eligible. Now, I've reached out to Thorne, and he was good enough to send me a text that he couldn't be on this morning. I hope he'll come on. I'm going to be completely respectful to him, but I'm going to ask him, why in the world would you stand up in front of a bunch of Republicans as a guy who doesn't even want to be part of the party and say, please vote for me to be your nominee for AG? But the other part is there's a form, a candidate acceptance of designation form, and John signed one. I know that. And this guy Thorne woulda, coulda, shoulda too. And at the bottom of it, over his signature, it would say, I accept the nomination and affirm that I meet all qualifications for the office prescribed by law. He could not do that without breaking the law. He could not have signed it. I presume he didn't submit one to you.
That would be correct. He told us something about he couldn't remember his birth date or something like that.
Well, no. Please tell me. This guy was older, but this guy was not Methuselah. All right. There's no way he could have not remembered his birth date. I don't think you're going to get that. I want this guy to come on air and answer these questions respectfully. But I'll tell you who else I reached out to. I reached out to, and you don't have to comment on this, I reached out to the Hanks people, our head Billy, and to Tina Peters people, because I would like them to come on and either say, yes, Rich Wyatt was telling the truth that we did endorse this guy, or two, we had no idea. Rich Wyatt just made it up. And then I reached out to Rich Wyatt to see if he would come on, because I think Coloradans need to know that people who are top line candidates for a major party in the state, especially ones that subscribe to the voter integrity issue the way that they have, I mean, it's the basis for their individual campaigns, pushed a fraudulent candidate on Republican assembly goers. As a Republican, that pisses me off. As a friend of John Kellner, I'd have to think super hard about, and this is just me, I'm not going to ask either of you to come as, it would make it super hard for me to want to support them for anything ever at any time. It really bothered me that they did that to me and to other Republicans and to John Kellner. Nonetheless, let's move on from that. Priscilla, when you saw, and you're right there, Priscilla, I mean, you are right there next to it. What is going on, and what did people talk to you about after this?
Oh, people are angry and surprised and shocked, and especially the group that is really strong for closed primaries, who've said, we want only Republicans voting for Republicans. And either they stood up there and endorsed this fraudulent candidate. And I know Thorne. Thorne is a sweet guy. I've seen him at conservative events. And so I've had opportunities to talk to him. I had no idea that he was thinking about running. But there are a lot of people who didn't know. They didn't do their homework. They didn't vet. And this is a lesson for all of us, to do our jobs and to vet and ask these questions and not assume, because trust has been broken. I don't know how we get the trust back. The one thing I personally expect are for the people who nominated Thorne to publicly apologize to the rest of the body for what they did and, you know, make it right. I'm a firm believer. Someone sent me a tweet that said, you know, this is the week that Jesus kissed and washed the feet of the person who betrayed him, which was Judas.
Yeah.
Hey, if Jesus can forgive Judas, I can forgive anybody's shenanigans. But
they got to ask for it.
If they want any sense of integrity, yeah, they got to ask for forgiveness for what they did, because it was wrong. And that's the only way I'm going to have a repaired relationship with some of these people. They need to fix this and stop talking about integrity and be about integrity.
Oh, man, that's a great way to put that, Priscilla. I think the other thing that grew out of the that middle floor nomination with the girl who wasn't even a licensed attorney, who was wearing the Ron Hanks stuff, all of them were, is that, you know, everybody talks about Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan, including Ron Hanks did. And yet Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment was, and every Republican knows it is, you don't talk trash about another Republican. It is one thing to try to distinguish yourself from another candidate based on whatever views, principle, whatever that is. But that thing that took place there, that was the kind of rusty knife politics that I'm saying 10 or 20 years ago, assembly goers would have revolted and rejected that person for that kind of malicious, unwarranted attack on another Republican. And yet here it was part and parcel. And so that gets me to this part that where Priscilla says, I think the trust has been broken. I think you can get it back. I think you can get it back with some changes in the rules. But right now, major legitimate candidates have to look at what took place and say, maybe I just want to petition on. I mean, maybe there's just no sense. And that would be a shame for the precinct caucuses, for the assembly. I have not done this to you guys before, but I'm going to ask you if you'd stay on. I do want to talk a little Neuschwang or anything else that you guys want to talk about with the assembly. Can you stay on for one more break?
Sure.
Okay, great. Christy Burton Brown, Priscilla Ron, Chair, Vice Chair, Colorado GOP, doing a little bit of an after-action report right here on what took place Saturday down at the World Arena in Colorado Springs at the GOP convention. Until we come back, you're listening to George Brockler on 710 KNUS. Market. And that person tends to be Amy Duncan from Alpine Planning. Amy, how are you?
Morning, George. I'm just fine for a Monday morning.
Good weekend.
How about yourself, friend?
Yeah, well, and I don't know if you've been listening. We were talking about what took place down in the Springs on Saturday. It was a little chaotic. Yeah. It got pulled off, but it was a little nuts. Please tell me that's not the description for the stock market.
Well, actually, that's a perfect description for the stock market. It's always nuts, right? But anyway, a little bit of a quiet morning so far. Right now, we've got the Dow off about 130, S&P off about 36, NASDAQ slightly negative, down, actually NASDAQ's off about 1.1% again. And we came off a negative week last week with Wall Street. Tech sector, the technology sector, which, of course, the NASDAQ is a great representation of, struggled and is an area of concern. NASDAQ was off 3.9% last week. Now you contrast that with healthcare stocks, for example, which are having a really good run. Healthcare stocks up 3%. So I think, you know, the thing driving the sell-off is, number one, obviously continued concerns over Russia and the Ukraine, and then the March Fed Reserve meetings from last week where they announced continued tapering and basically, you know, very, very solid expectation of continuing interest rates, continuing rises to interest rates. So right now, though, George, it's not uncommon to see Wall Street with a little bit lower volume because we're coming into earnings season. So Q1 earnings are going to begin this week, later Wednesday and Thursday. Kicking off, we've got the major banks and airlines, J.P. Morgan, Delta, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, just to name a few.
Oh,
that oftentimes, of course, is a big market mover. And I think after the volatility we've seen the last 4 months in particular, earnings will be a really good kind of settling point for the market. So as always, stay tuned. We'll keep our eye on it. Call in and talk to you every morning. And if anyone would like some advice, please do give us a call.
Yeah, Amy, I'm a consumer of almost everything you just read out there. And based on my consumption, I'm hoping that they're all going to have big earnings numbers so we can all take a breath and exhale nicely, because you're right. The market has been a little cuckoo. Alpine Planning Group is. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Amy.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Amy. Sorry.
I was going to say, I won't digress on that, but that's been, you know, such an interesting kind of contrarian type point, right, George? I mean, when was the last time you weren't in a full restaurant or on a full airplane?
Right.
And yet everyone's talking about how, you know, unhealthy the economy is, whereas the U.S. consumer balance sheet is quite strong. So more to come on that another day.
Well, yeah, and I hope that day is tomorrow. Alpine Planning Group is a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Investing is a matter of trust, and they are prepared to earn yours. Call them at 303-843-0918 today. Amy, thank you so much.
Thanks, George.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
We are pressed for time here at 710 KNUS with Christy Burton Brown and Priscilla Ron, who have been very generous with their time this morning. I wanted to ask you, Christy, because I was a witness to part of this. Danielle Neuschwanger, candidate for governor, she doesn't make the ballot. She gets 27%, but then comes back at the end of the assembly, and you can see this coming. She's coming down the center aisle. She's wearing her jeans now and her shirt, not how she presented herself at the time of the assembly. Like, she turned around and come back and marches up the little ramp. There was no gatekeeper there. And goes to you. And what I saw was she reaches for the microphone to take it from you, like she's going to address the assembly goers. KBB shut her down. What took place?
Yeah, George, you're right. That's what happened. This was the end of the assembly. So we'd gone through all the races at that point. The governor's race was the first race of the day. So long over at that point. And we were going through resolutions. People were still voting. And she did, yes, she came up the side of the stage that everyone had been exiting on that side. So purposely she was trying to come up the side of the stage where people were not allowed to come up during the day. And yeah, did reach out and try to grab the microphone, which I, of course, can't let her do. You're
right.
Not allowed to just walk up on the stage and grab a microphone, and told her to get down off the stage and address us appropriately. And we were able to have a conversation later.
And that conversation was when somebody video recorded, I presume with her consent, saying that she was going to, if she found out something that you did to cheat whole counties out of voting, which, by the way, the numbers don't reveal that. I think nearly as many, if not more, people voted for governors, voted for the U.S. Senate race, that she would see you locked up or something like that.
Correct. It was her threat, and her husband threatened to beat up my dad. And
what?
You know, a lot of language that certainly shouldn't have been thrown around by someone presenting themselves to be a candidate for a Republican governor. George, I understand. I've lost things before.
Yep,
it's very difficult to lose, especially if it's your first time losing something big. But I think we've got to all be mature about it, show grace, and ask questions. I welcome questions.
And Christy, you did not lose your composure.
And
that's the key. Hey, Priscilla, with the few seconds we have left before they're going to turn all of us off here for the top of the hour, your final thoughts.
Yeah, I was sorry. I couldn't get to Christy in enough time to be her bodyguard in that
coming
moment,
off the top rope. Yeah.
This is the type of behavior we just can't have. We can't be physically confrontational and have a Will Smith.
Priscilla, God, yeah. I want to keep you guys for the next hour. I can't. You've been so generous. Chrissy Burton Brown, Priscilla Ron, yeah. Superwomen from the GOP, George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.